Hello, and welcome to the Bookish Banter podcast, where we'll be sharing our opinions about our favorite books, authors, and bookish impulse buys. Follow along on our journey to finishing and sharing our endless TBR. Go ahead and subscribe, leave us a review, and follow us on our Instagram and TikTok at the Bookish Banter podcast. Let's get started.
I think it's fair to say you guys know I love coffee. I cannot get through the day without it, and somehow I've become the person who exclusively drinks Fable Grounds coffee. Every time I go on vacation, I think I should seriously bring some with me because nothing tastes like it. It's roasted in small batches in Maryland, and it's every book lover's dream. Fable Grounds has fandoms like Lord of the Rings, Six of Crows, and even some of our favorite Greek gods. The bag sizes range from 2 ounces all the way up to 12, so you can try a few different flavors before you find your perfect one. She also has gorgeous stoneware mugs that I use quite literally every single day. There is nothing like drinking coffee out of a stoneware mug. It is an experience, I'll say that. So check out Fable Grounds Coffee and use my code LLAMA10 to save on your next purchase. Hello, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good. I have a very special guest on today. If you want to go ahead and introduce yourself and say hello.
Hi, my name is Sydney Bolin, and I wrote a novel called The Ones That Write Themselves.
I love it. I'm very excited to chat today. Before we get started, we always start with our icebreaker question. So my first question for you is, what is your favorite standalone?
My favorite standalone, it's really hard because I'm a huge reader, but my favorite standalone at the minute is Book Lovers by Emily Henry. I'm a big Emily Henry girl.
Okay. Good choice. Good choice. I really liked that book until the last 10%, I think. And then I was like, I'm done.
It is very hard to stick an ending with a romance novel. It's really hard. So I think that is the one where she does it best. But I really like the characters in that book and the story in that book. So it's a big one for me.
Yeah. Yeah. She's such a funny character. And I think the sister bothered me. And once all that drama went down, I was I think I'm done with this now.
You were done. Okay.
I was like, no.
I get that. And I get why that sister was needed for conflict purposes, but you could also kind of take Libby out and be the same.
But that one is, I remember reading that at the beginning and being like, this is so reader girl coded.
Which I like.
Yeah. Love that. Okay, so what is your favorite series?
My favorite series, basic answer, but A Court of Thorns and Roses series by Sarah J. Maas.
Yeah,
it doesn't get any better. It just doesn't.
It's a popular, everybody always says SJM or The Invisible Life of Addie LaRue in some way, shape, or form.
So. Oh, we're not done, but The Invisible Life of Addie LaRue will come up at some point.
Perfect. So, next question is, who's your ultimate book boyfriend?
Yeah. Again, this is really hard. I put a call out to the friend group on this one because I was like, I suddenly know no man.
That's right.
I know none. The second I was thinking about this question, Charlie from Book Lovers. Great choice. I love him. He is just Logan Lerman in my brain. The second that I read it, I was like, oh no, my brain has pictured Logan Lerman and they could never picture anyone else. And he is the white boy of the century. So we love him. But then some other ones are Josh Darling from The Roommate by Rosie Dannon.
Okay. Okay.
That was the first spicy book that I read with my friends. So we have a very warm place in our hearts for him. We love him. And then Anthony Bridgerton.
Great choice as well.
Yes.
Great choice. Yeah. I'm so ready for the next season. Are you ready?
I am so ready. I actually got screeners for the first half of the season yesterday, so they're ready to go on my Netflix account. Just talking to watch them.
I love it. That is amazing. Okay, who is your ultimate book girlfriend?
Book girlfriend was hard because I was I noticed the female characters so much and they're so endearing to me. They don't stick in my brain a book girlfriend does. Which I feel like I need to work on as a person. But I really I just finished a book called Ruby Spencer's Whiskey Year by Raquel Bilo. I'm not sure how to pronounce her last name. And I really, really liked that character. She was just very grounded and very realistic, I thought. And the story was one that I kind of related to. So I liked her a lot. And then I also really like Nesta Archeron. and Gwen, which we haven't seen a lot of yet, but I feel like Gwen is going to be a stellar book girlfriend. Just give it some time.
I agree. I'm a huge Nesta stan, so girl after my own heart. Yeah.
Okay.
We can, you know, evaluate that at a later date, but
hopefully soon. I saw Sarah's Instagram post.
I know. It's like, it's so funny that the chokehold that woman has on the internet. It's hilarious. I know.
She posts one photo that has not even of a book, and the whole world was like.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, what could this mean? What does it mean?
The ACA what hashtag, I was like, that's so mean.
We'll see. I love that. Okay, awesome. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got started in your writing journey, et cetera, et cetera?
I never set out to write a book. I never wanted to be an author as a little kid, anything like that. I was really bored in the pandemic in my house. And there was a lot of like stuff that I'd been thinking about. I was reading again with my friends. I hadn't really read at that veracity since high school, which I think is something that happens with a lot of people when you look at like how blown up the book industry has gotten since then. And I was just kind of upset about the lack of authentic representation in novels and in media in general, to be honest. So what I really wanted to do was write a movie script, but I did not know how to write a movie script. So my friend was like, write it as a book first, and then we'll figure out how to turn it into a movie script, just to get the story down and get it out of your head. And I was like, okay, I'll write a book. I have nothing better to do. So I sat down and I wrote this book, and I absolutely loved doing it. I had so much fun. There was no pressure. And by the end, I was like, I think I want to put this out. Like, I think I want to try to make it a real thing and not try to turn it into a script. And here we are. Now I just love doing it. It's so much fun.
Yeah, I feel like it's such a like wild journey that everyone has been on in like the pandemic, and how much we were like, wait, I think we were like big book nerds and like read so many things, and how many authors have like come out of it being like, I forgot that I like to do this.
Exactly. I think, well, there's so many cons to the pandemic. I'm not going to sit here and be like, it was great. I do think that there's little things like that, like little pros that everybody needed the room to like breathe and kind of reevaluate things. So
yeah,
there are things I'm thankful for from it.
Yes. It was a nice break is what it was for a lot of people. And just like a chance to evaluate what you were doing with your life, you know?
Yes. In hindsight, when you were in it, it was kind of like, this is the worst. But
yeah, I saw that it was like 4 years since the pandemic and people were like posting all of these videos. And I was like, wow, look at all these people doing great things with their life. It's couldn't be me.
Yeah. I was also like, I can't believe it's been 4 years.
Yeah.
Well, I guess it lasted like two. So it's really only been two.
Yeah.
Which makes me feel a little bit better.
Yeah. It's been a while is what it has been. So can you give us a spoiler-free overview of the ones that write themselves your debut novel?
Yes, I can. But I don't think I'm the only author who like, you write a book and then somebody is like, what's it about? And you're just like, people, like, it goes out of your head. And the hardest part of writing this book, hands down, was when I was done and it was like, write the back copy. Suddenly I was like, no.
I don't know what this is about. And I
can't tell. Exactly. But The Ones That Are Themselves is a novel about a woman who works in the music industry. And she gets a chance to go on a 10-day business trip to Ireland to check in on a band that her label has recently signed. And while she is there, she happens to meet this really charming and charismatic busker, and he keeps her company for her 10 days. And she has to figure out where they go from there, if they go anywhere at all.
I love it. So what inspired you to write this story?
So as we said, with the pandemic, I am a big fan of Ireland. I've been there many, many times. And since 2020 was a leap year, my friend and I had gone over to Dublin to go to a concert. And we were there and we came back on March 1st. of 2020. And there were a couple of people in the airport with masks on. And we were like, what is happening? What is going on? Didn't think much of it. And then 2 weeks later, the entire world shut down. So I very much had Ireland like on the brain. Normal People came out that April. Obsessed with Normal People, loved Normal People. I had read the book previously and was like so pumped for the show. I watch it, I still rewatch it. You don't think people should rewatch Normal People. I don't think it's good for your mental health, but yeah. Like, I rewatch it, so I can't judge you. So when I sat down, decided that I was going to write the novel, there was no other place for it to be set but Ireland. And again, I didn't outline it. I didn't sit down and think, what do I want to write about? I just kind of started with Laurel and a character that has cerebral palsy and was like, what does this look like? Where does it go? And she ended up in Ireland. It was very much an escapism right for me while I was sitting in my room, not able to go anywhere or do anything.
Yeah. I love that. I went to Ireland last year in May for the first time. And it was like, reading this was very nostalgic because I was like, I've been to all these places in Dublin and like, it's just I lived abroad for a little while and a lot of my friends were from Ireland and I was like, this is giving everything I wanted it to give.
Yeah, that makes you so happy. Yeah. I was just worried that it wouldn't like come across the way that I wanted it to, but and I'm glad you noticed that you have been to all the places because everywhere that they do go in the book is like a real place. So yeah, it was me and my Google Maps against the world while I was running.
That's right. No, I loved it. I was like, oh my gosh, I know exactly where all these places are. And like, it just felt so, yeah, it was like the nostalgia as you're reading it, even though it like hasn't happened to you. I was like, this is giving.
Yeah. Yay. Yeah.
I love that. And I feel like Ireland's like a fun one because for Americans that haven't traveled or gone anywhere, what have you, like they speak English and it's one of those places like everybody, I feel like everyone's like, oh yeah, I'm part Irish. So it's like, you can feel that little bit, you know, when you're reading this, even if you've never been there, it's like, it feels like kind of cozy, you know?
It should be part of Ireland's tourism app. Just
Give
people my book and they'll go over.
Then you're going to want to go there because that's right. Yeah. So you have some really great disability representation in your book. Where did your inspiration come from for that?
Well, I have the same disability that Laurel has. So I was just writing what I know. And Laurel very much thinks the way that I do. And I didn't want the disability to be a plot point per se, because to me, it's not a plot point. Like in my life, it's not something that I didn't want it to be something that she has to overcome or that he has to get over to like want her or any of those like cliche tropes that you find in novels with quote unquote representation. So it wasn't like I was trying to have a novel with disability rep. I was just writing essentially myself. Again, wasn't trying to write a book. So it was very much a self-inserty fan fiction-esque start to the whole thing. And I was really just happy with how it came out. It felt like what I always had wanted to read.
Yeah. No, I love that. And I like when, you know, there is rep of some form and it's not, like you said, it's not like something she has to overcome. Like it's who they are as a person or that, like sometimes it's the guy and things like that. So it's like, I love when you get that opportunity to kind of have it be, it's just who they are and part of their personality, but like, you don't need to fix them to like make the book better.
Exactly. Yeah. And I knew I wanted it to come up more than just like telling the reader that this is what she, I was like, they have to address it at some point because when you meet new people, they want to know and it does have to be addressed at some point. But I was like, but that's the only time I want it to come up. Like I want it to be one conversation and then they're like, good to go, done.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So. I love that. So what made you decide to set a majority of the book in Dublin specifically?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think because I had just been there, it was so fresh in my mind. And I do, every time I go, I have terrible like post-trip like depression.
Yeah.
So I've been to Dublin the most. I really, really want to go to Ireland at some point and just do the smaller towns in the countryside and like Airbnbs and the fields and whatnot. But every time I've gone with friends and we stay in Dublin and then we do those paddy wagon day trip buses up to the Cliffs of Moher and then Giant's Causeway and all that. I think I've been on every one they offer at this point. Dublin, I think, again, when you're attracting like an readership audience, starting with what people know is always a good idea. So when people think Ireland, they think Dublin. So I wanted there to still be that city aspect, and I wanted there to be places I could pull from quickly for them to go to and stuff for them to do in the city center. And again, since it was her going over there on a business trip, the band was going to be playing in Dublin. So that's just how it panned out.
Yeah, Dublin is such a fun city too, and like it's such a hub of like being able to walk places and do things and all of that. Yeah,
I actually really like the Temple Bar area. I know it's like super touristy, but I was like, I like it over here.
You only go like once, you know?
Yeah, you have to like every time that I go, like the first night, it's like you hit the old Dubliner and then you hit the Temple Bar pub, and you're like, ah, I'm here, like. Yeah.
Land of my people, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I love that. So are there any underlying messages or themes that you hope people take away from this book?
I was writing it very much, and I think this is going to be a trend for anything that I write, for myself almost, and like saying things to myself. So I think anybody reading it, I hope that they get out of it what they need to get out of it. Like the dedication is to whoever is reading this. I hope it makes you feel a little more seen, however you need to be. But for me, it was about getting out of your own head and like taking a chance on something that is scary. And that's kind of the overarching, I think, theme for me. And that there's a difference of being content with where you are and then being happy with where you are.
Very true. I love that. There was a lot of moments in here that felt so realistic too. And that, you know, it's like a problem comes up and she's like, okay, how am I going to resolve this? And I feel like a lot of times in romance novels, like it's never like talked through and thought out. And, you know, when she ends up on the business trip, she's not supposed to go, not to give too much away, but she's not originally the person that's supposed to go. And she like has to walk through all the steps. And I love that because I feel like we get in these romance novels and they're like, oh, I'm just going to do it. And I'm so carefree. But she was like such a realistic character that was like, can I logically do this? And will this work? And like, you know, am I going to enjoy my time here and be, you know, like you said, content versus happy. And I love that.
Yeah. Good. I'm glad. I really enjoyed being in her head again. And I had so much fun writing the book. I was always a big reader, but never a writer. And the opportunity to be like, oh, she can think anything that I want her to think, or she can. I liked being able to be like, you're going to go through these thought processes with her, whether it's freaking out about getting a text message or going to Ireland on a business trip. Like, I wanted to really feel like you were kind of in her place.
Yeah, absolutely. That's probably very fun too, that you get to recklessly like put whatever thoughts you want in her brain.
Exactly. I can be as unhinged as possible. She thinks how I think. Mm-hmm. So for this one, since it was my first one, I wasn't trying to like reinvent the wheel or get in somebody else's head or anything like that. So I tend to overthink things. So she tends to spin on things that she doesn't need to spin on. But.
Totally valid. I love it. So there's quite a bit of emphasis on the music industry in this one. Did you do any sort of research before writing this, or do you have experience in the music industry?
I work in the music industry. I went to Belmont in Nashville, big emphasis on music industry at that school, and I did entertainment industry studies. So in LA, I worked at Live Nation for 6.5 years, 7 years, whatever it is. That's where I used to work. And I worked in meet and greets and sound checks and like a VIP experience ticket. So I've always pretty much been very much in the music industry and a big fan of concerts. I go to all these concerts and all these different venues. And so again, there wasn't a lot of research. I just kind of knew enough. Like, you don't have to be super specific. You just have to write what people think that they already know. Mm-hmm. So the music part of it was very important for me to include in the book. Like, all the different artists were important for me to include in the playlist, because I feel like Ireland in general is very music strict. So I wanted it to kind of pull everything together in that way.
Yeah, I love that. I love that you say you just have to write what people think they know.
Yeah, because if you get too specific, it kind of breaks the magic. But if you're like, this is how people think this works, so that's how it can work.
That's right. No, I love it. So my question for you then, with all the playlists and everything, what are your top 5 party playlist songs?
Well, the party playlist exists. It's on my Spotify. but I haven't updated it in a long time. So I think to me, the party playlist was any song that you're constantly like, I love this song. I love this song. I love this song every time they come on. So my party playlist songs are always going to be like, best song ever, One Direction. If I ever switch it off that song, something is terribly wrong with me. Life in the Fast Lane, The Eagles, another great one.
Yeah.
Anything by Bruce Springsteen. I love Bruce Springsteen. We'll pick an upbeat one. I really like No Surrender. It's a fun Bruce Springsteen song. Mm-hmm. And then I'll do some more recent ones. I really like Austin by Dasha. If you're on TikTok, you've probably heard of that.
Great one.
And then what else? The Beyonce song.
Texas Hold'em.
Yes.
Yeah. Another great one.
Good one for right now. Yeah.
Yeah. Totally valid. Okay. I love that. I was like, well, I want to get the gauge of like, what are your top five for sure? So
yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. They are constantly changing. I'm again, big music person, I'm having an indie pop moment right now. So I'm trying to find like newer, smaller artists, but those big, loud, upbeat songs are the party playlist.
That's so true. And like when I read that part, I was like, this is so relatable of like having your friend that you're with and you're like, okay, we're going to have to hype ourselves up before we go. And like, it's a transition to like, okay, we're getting ready into full on, we're going out.
Yes. Yeah. Originally in the book, she didn't get to Ireland until like page 100 because I had so much. You went out with them and she didn't end up going to Ireland until the next morning. So they ended up going out and it was really long and you got to see like that whole process. But my friends were like, you cannot meet the man in this romance novel on page 100. Like you have to. And it was page 100 on a Word document. So I do not know what it would have been in an actual book.
Right.
So I had to cut it down a lot. But I loved that part of it so much. I liked her and I liked Taylor and I liked being with them. So it was hard to give that stuff up for the sake of the greater story.
Yeah, I always joke with my best friend lives like 10 minutes away and she's married with a child. And like I, fiance, I live here, but we like always joke that we missed out on the era of like being best friends living in the same town together. And I'm like, I will be forever sad that like I never did the roommate thing outside of college with like your best friend and going out and like enjoying that. So yeah, that cut deep for me.
You can live vicariously.
Yeah, I'm like, in another life, I will have like a best friend that I live with for years and years and years.
Yeah. I did it for a couple years. I recommend it. It's fun.
Yeah, I'm like, listen, especially now, everybody's got like good ideas and like cute aesthetics and I'll never be over it.
Yeah,
now I live in suburbia, so I'm doing my best. So what was your debut publishing journey kind of like for you? What made you decide to go the indie publishing route, et cetera?
Well, I did originally query this novel and I got a lot of, this is great. We love it. But it's not exactly right for my list. And it's really hard when you get that kind of feedback because you're like, okay, why? Like, can you elaborate? And I got a couple like people who wanted the full manuscript, but they wanted the disability to either be like less or more. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't what I wanted. And so I told myself there was one agent that I was waiting for that had the manuscript for a while. And I was like, if she doesn't want it, then I'll figure out what I'm going to do. And I got a no from her, but then the pandemic kind of waned and I got busy with work again. Mm-hmm. So I wrote this in 2020, finished it in 2020. Obviously it came out in 2023 because I sat on it for so long. I was so busy. I couldn't touch it. It kind of like fell to the wayside. And then in 2023, I picked it back up and I reread it. And I was like, okay, how can I make this better? I had read more since I had wrote it. I kind of like, I was 3 years older. So looking back on it, I knew what I had been what I've been wanting to say with the novel. So I took out a lot and I added a lot and it got a big developmental edit. Then I quoted it some more, didn't get any further with it. And so finally I was like, I want to put this out and I'm just going to do it myself. So I decided that I was going to quit my job and move to London for 6 months to give myself space to put it out. And I did. I got to do the whole design a cover, do the inside, all that fun PR boxes, all that fun stuff with it. And then it came out on its own. It's been kind of a slow burn doing it by myself and like learning what I wish I had done and what I'm going to do next time and like what worked and what didn't work and like learning to give it time to let people read it. And like, it doesn't have to be like an instant hit or an instant viral story, all that stuff. But I think everybody has to do their first one. You have to do it once to know how you want to do it again, or if you want to do it again. And all in all, it's been a really fun process, and I'm going to do it again. So I love it. I think the number one lesson, though, is if it doesn't do what you want it to do or what you think it's going to do immediately, that's fine. Like, you have to give people time to read it. And that's something I constantly have to remind myself.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like it's really hard to, like, see all the metrics and the stats and see other people and like not compare or not think like, oh, if I just had this,
it's so hard.
I struggle with that a lot, like on the podcast. I'm like, I'm so happy for all of these other people that aren't me, like, you know. It gets really hard to like watch that, but it's fun. And like you said, you learn so much like in that process and kind of deciding like what steps you take the next time and what you get to do. And like,
exactly,
the feeling of your first novel will never be replicated, you know what I mean? Have done that for the first time again.
I think the hardest part for me is one of the reasons that it's so hard to let it do what it's going to do over time is I've had this story with me since 2020. Right. So I have to like remind myself that it hasn't even been out in the world for 6 months, because in my head, I wrote it so long ago.
Right.
It's been here forever. But it really did need that rewrite that it got. Like it was a better book for it. So I am glad that I waited on that aspect. But it's so fun. It's so fun to like get, like have a cover that you like. And then anytime anybody posts about it on their story, I'm like, oh my God, oh my God. Like, it's just fun to know that people are reading it. It's weird to be like sometimes I'll see somebody post their bookshelf, like a bookstagrammer, and it'll be on their bookshelf, and I'm like, that's weird.
Weird.
Yeah. I'm like, like imposter syndrome. I'm like, this is not my book. Like, I didn't do that.
That's not mine. That's totally fair. Yeah. It's hard to like, it must be so fun to like see that. And like when it first came in, you know, physically the first time, and like see it all written out and everything. And like,
it was weird to see how big it was, because I had no idea. Because when you write down a Word document,
you're
like, I don't know how many pages this is going to be.
That's right.
In real life. And then you get the book and you're like, oh, granted the font in my book is pretty big, but it was still like, this is a real thing that I did. Like, it's tangible now.
Yeah, yeah. And it's many pages. Look at me go.
Yeah.
I love that. So what are your favorite types of scenes to write?
I really like a back and forth bantery scene. Mm-hmm. Because again, when I'm really bad at like pre-planning, like I know my overarching story and I know like for my outline doesn't really look like a plot outline.
Yeah.
It's more like a calendar. So I had like, she gets there on this day, and then this is the time that she's in Ireland, and this is what happens on Monday, and this is what happens on Tuesday, you know, that kind of thing. Like, I knew like the things I wanted to take place, and then I kind of let the characters, their conversation becomes what it becomes as I write it. And so when you get an idea for like a flirty line or something that like I personally would like die over if somebody did to me, it's always really fun to be like, ha, 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 here we go. you know.
Yeah.
Be like, as unhinged as you want, or as normal as you want, you know.
Yeah. You get to play that scene out for yourself.
Exactly. Even though I feel like Nolan and Laurel are pretty like realistic in their romance. It's not like super quote unquote book boyfriendy. Like, it's not like I wasn't too unhinged when I was doing it.
Yeah. You just, it's like the internal monologue is a little unhinged, but that's okay, because that's how we are as women. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
We are, in fact, overthinking everything and calling our best friends to ask how we should respond to things. So.
Exactly. Yes. I did like that part a lot when she has to respond to him. But because of the time difference, like everyone is asleep and she's like, right, I have to do this by myself.
Yeah. Like, how do I do this alone?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I love that. Banter is like my favorite thing to read. So I'm glad that it's your favorite thing to write.
Yeah, it's my favorite thing to write.
So is there a type of scene that you struggle with?
I think for me, it's hard for me to write any kind of more intimate scene, like a kiss scene or something, because you're like, I'm always like, are their hands in the right place? Like, I think when I was writing this one, I had like googled like top 20 kiss scenes to like make sure like hand placement was correct, or like you don't want to use words that like take people out of it. You don't want it to be too over the top, and you know, like, it's I tend to overthink it, especially writing this one where I knew like people that knew me were probably going to picture me, and I was like, my grandparents are going to read this. Like, how far can I take it? Which my grandma was like, I thought it was going to be spicier, and I was like, okay, all right, grandma. Okay, have your seal of approval to go farther on the next one, I guess.
Fair enough.
Yeah, but yeah, those are the ones that I struggle with the most. I like them once they're done, but in the moment, I'm like, is this dumb? Like, I send it to my friends, and I'm like, does any of this read off to you? And they're like, no, it's good. Yeah.
Are the hands, the hand-eye coordination, are we good here? Like,
are we good? Is this normal? Did I miss anything? Like, you know, when you're reading a spicy scene and you're like, how'd that get, like,
I feel that way often. Like, if I wrote a book, I would write no romance. Like, I would write no spice because I would not know the logistics of that.
Yes. Yeah. Not that there's spice in this one for anyone that wants to pick it up because it's spicy. Not super spicy.
No.
But I also don't think that fit the character.
Yeah.
When I was considering adding some, I was like, no, this girl is freaking out too much over just having a crush. There's no way that would happen. Yeah. But yeah.
No, I love that. We like had a conversation at the beginning of the year. A bunch of me and my friends were talking about how we wanted more romance and less spice this year. Like, I really want to read about like good relationship development and like people that are really enjoying each other. And like, it doesn't, I mean, I love a good spicy book, but I was like, I want a lot of romance this year. And like, I want it to feel like very just like intimate and not a spicy way.
Yes, I get that. I love a good spicy scene. I do. But I want it to service the plot. Mm-hmm. I don't want it to just be like, here you go. Here's it takes me out of it. I think, again, not to bring up Emily Henry again, but she has a quote from some interview where she says, you have to earn the blowjob. And I think about that all the time.
Yeah. Totally valid. Yeah, definitely love that. So speaking of romance and intimacy and spice and all those things, what kind of drew you to writing romance in the first place? Mm-hmm.
Again, I think I just wanted to not wait to like see myself fully depicted on a screen or in a book or whatever. I'm a big lover girly. Romance is my jam. Like, I love a good rom-com. I read rom-coms like this, live and breathe it, you know. And if I was gonna write anything, it was gonna be romance. It couldn't have been anything else. So that's what I wanted to see myself in the most. So that's what I wrote.
I love that. Would you ever consider writing in a different genre, like young adult or fantasy or something?
I would love to write. I also love reading fantasy, more romanticy than like straight fantasy. But I would love to write something with kind of fantastic elements, maybe kind of similar to like an Ashley Poston.
Yeah.
I forget. Yeah. Kind of like what she does, but fantasy is so hard because you have no rules. Mm-hmm. You know, it can be anything that you want it to be, and you kind of have to set your own laws of physics, you know, that kind of thing. But I would love to do that. I also would really like to write a mystery.
That would be so fun. I love that.
Yeah, like a romantic mystery novel. I think that would be
nice, cozy mystery.
Yes, but there are always going to be a romantic element.
Definitely. It's really hard to find it. Like, we talk about this a lot. I feel like it's really hard to find a book that doesn't have romance, even in a thriller.
Yeah. I need it. I don't want to read a book where there's not at least tension between somebody. Like, that's what makes me turn the page. Fair.
Very valid. I feel like a lot of people feel that way. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what made you decide to write in the multi-point of view, dual POV?
I wanted there to be... I love dual POV. I also love single POV. And I think that you need to figure out what services your story most when you decide which one you're going to do. Mm-hmm. Because there's a lot of different ways to do dual POV. You can do it once. You can do it every other chapter. You can do it not, you know. And for this one, I wanted you to be able to be in Nolan's head for the cerebral palsy conversation. I wanted it to be like, I wanted you to see how casual he was about it and that it didn't like phase him in the slightest. Mm-hmm. So that is when I was like, I do need to be in his head a little bit, but I didn't want that to be the first time you were in his head. I wanted there to be like a lead up to it so that it didn't seem like, oh, this is the only thing that he was thinking about.
Yeah.
And then I do his POV just a couple more times once I do it once because I liked it. Yeah. I liked doing it, but that was the reason for it. Actually, my favorite chapter is from his POV, but yeah. That.
Yeah, it's fine. I'm kind of with you. I'm either or, but I know there's a lot of people that like do not want to read single point of view. And I'm like, I feel like it's fun to just stick in that one person's head the whole time, but it is,
I love
being from the male perspective. Like I want someone to write an entire romance book from male POV.
It's on my list. I have an idea that I think would fit being from the male POV the whole time. Yeah. So it's on my list, but I also really like when it's single POV like the whole time until like the very end, you know, and then you're like, you know, I think again, it's whatever best services the story. If you're wanting to keep some things like hidden, but I know a lot of people like being in the guy's head and being like, oh, he's so piney and he actually is like so into her and he doesn't seem like it and like that kind of thing.
Yeah. But, I like when all your questions get answered.
Yes.
Yeah, I love it. So I have to ask, who are your fan casts for your main characters?
I ask this a lot when I interview authors because I'm so nosy and I always want to know. And
yeah,
the cop out, well, you're like, understandable, I get it, of being like, whoever gets to play the characters is like the right, I get it. Like, I get saying that. And I get not wanting to put people in other people's heads. Because as the author, you have like a little bit of power, but Laurel is hard. I will say for Laurel, because I would want whoever it would be to have cerebral palsy in some form. And so there's not really anybody that like comes straight to mind. Again, I'm also, they don't have to look like her. If, you know, they're authentic in that way, that would be the more important part of it for me. And then Nolan, I want him to actually be Irish. Like I said, I watched a lot of normal people before I wrote this book. I also am a big Niall Horan fan.
Nice.
So like, you know, that kind of energy, you know, he's got that Irish, like charming, charismatic, like golden retrieverish energy would be so. Honestly, I wouldn't be that picky for him because a man has an Irish accent and I'm kind of like, okay.
You know? Okay, that sounds fine.
Do whatever. It works for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Like, am I?
Did you picture anybody specific or have any?
What's his name from Leap Year? The main character from?
Matthew Good.
That's right. Okay. I was picturing him because the reference is in it. And then I went and watched the trailer because I was like, man, it's been so long since I've seen this movie. So I like watched the trailer and I was like, that's him. But like 10 years earlier, I feel like. You know what I mean?
He's British.
That's fair. So
I know. It's a lie. Yeah. When I found out that it was a lie, I was like.
Devastating. A devastating turn of events.
So sad. Apparently, Irish people think that he does a really terrible Irish accent. I don't think so. But like.
Couldn't tell you.
But I'm pretty easy. So.
That's fair. I was also thinking Barry from Saltburn and The Eternals, but again, only because he is like, you know, a very up and coming and an Irish actor.
The Irish right now. Yeah.
But you know, he's a little weird, so it's not him. He could be like Colin, maybe.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause he's like, I love him, but not him.
Yes, exactly. I get it.
Yeah. So did you have any specific goals in mind when you went to publish this one the first time? Like a word count you wanted to hit, tropes you wanted to include, anything like that?
No, not really. I only one that is my favorite.
Okay.
But I didn't want it to be the typical only one bed. That's all I will say for like spoilers, I guess. But word count, I didn't have a word count. I'm trying for the first time to do word count now.
Mm-hmm.
But if the story feels wrapped up before I hit that word count, I'm not going to like stretch it on purpose or anything. It's also hard because when you self-publish, the longer it is, the more expensive it is to print, and thus That's the right. more expensive it is in the long run. But I was literally just sitting at my computer doing whatever I wanted and writing whatever I wanted. And there is a scene with an ice cream cone that I was adamant remained in the book. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I liked it so much, like going back and reading it. I don't know why I wrote it. I was like, it has to remain in here. But I moved that scene like 3 times. And my poor friends that were beta reading it was like, didn't I already read this? And I was like, yes. But I changed what it was. So when I wrote it, I was really adamant that remained in there. I could not tell you why.
Okay, totally fair. Yeah,
but it was.
I love that. That was a great scene. So I can see why you left it in there.
Good. Okay.
So do you have any other books that you've written or in the process of writing that you feel like you might not publish?
No, I didn't write anything prior to this. And now that I've done it once, I want to do it again. So I am working on something right now, but I am working on it to be able to publish it.
I love it. I feel like, yeah, there's people who are like, oh, when I was 10, I wrote a whole book and I like will never see the light of day. And I'm like, I am so happy for you. So I'm just curious.
This was the first time that I have ever tried to do it. And
I love it.
Yeah.
That's the way to do it. You know what I mean? You can't just like let it sit in the desk for 20 years and then decide.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So do you have any specific like writing rituals, you know, since this book has a lot to do with music? Do you have to listen to music? Do you need like a specific drink or anything like that?
Nothing. So when I was writing The Ones That Write Themselves, again, it was the pandemic. And what I would do is I would get up, I would take my car, and my little daily outing was to go to a coffee shop. It's called Priscilla's in Toluca Lake. It's in my acknowledgements. If you live in Los Angeles and you're listening to this, I highly recommend it. They, during the pandemic, had like a takeout window that you could go up to and get coffee, and they had a drink called an Irish mocha. So I would go and I would get that in a large so that I would drink it all day. And I would go back and I would just write at the computer, and that was my little ritual. I had the playlist going a little bit, especially if I was like stuck on a scene. I would just listen to a song on repeat until I like figured out what I wanted to happen. And I kind of do that same thing now, minus the coffee run, because I am trying to save money.
That's right.
So I just make coffee at my house. But I do have a playlist. I'm always going to have a playlist. Music is a big thing for me. It's a big part of getting my brain to work, I guess. And I'm also a very visual reader. I know some people don't picture anything when they read, which I can't wrap my head around at all. I don't get it. And I'm kind of sad for those people. Sorry if that's you. But I picture everything kind of like a movie in my head. So like there's the opening credit song and there's the like montage-y bit and like that kind of thing. So music is definitely a big part of that.
Yeah, I love it. I feel like there's people that are like, I cannot listen to music when I read or write or do anything. And then there's people that are like, I'm like that. I'm like, I have to have sound in the background. Like I have to be listening to music at all times.
Sometimes I want it to be quiet. Like if I'm really, and when I first start and I haven't like gotten into the vibe and the world yet, I do need it to be quiet so I can be like, okay, let me figure out what I want to do. But once I'm going, then it's music.
Then it's time.
Yeah.
I love it. Do you have any advice for any aspiring authors?
Just write it. Don't overthink it. Just write it. And if you like it and the querying thing is not working, self-publish.
Do yourself.
Yeah. And I also would say read self-publish. Read indie. There's so much more out there than you think that there is. Minority representation wise, you can probably find it in indie if you can't find it in traditional. But you just have to look a little bit harder. That's what I've learned. So
yeah, definitely. I feel like the world of indie publishing has grown so much in the last like four years.
It's also really intimidating.
Yes.
And I think people can get a bad taste in their mouth for it. If you read an indie published book that was not ready, that you didn't like very much, that you didn't think was well written, and it's the first thing that you're going to read, people are like, oh, that's what self-published means. And it doesn't. Like, you can get an editor on Readzy, you can get a copy editor on Readzy, you can, you know, like they can go through the exact same process as a traditional published book.
Yeah,
it but the only difference is that it's somebody doing it themselves. So even if you read a bad one, try it, like try again, like pick a different one, because there's so much variety in it. Just like there's so much variety in traditional publishing. I have read many a traditional published book that I did not love, and then obviously a lot that I did. So
yeah,
it's the same. People just have a bias against it sometimes, I think.
Totally valid. I feel that. You mentioned that you have some new things coming up and you're in the middle of writing your next book, but what is kind of next on the docket for you?
The next book on the docket is, I'm only like 10,000 words into it right now, so it is baby right now. But I do have another romance, and it where this one was a slow burn, where the ones that write themselves was the slowest of slow burns. Like, I get it. This one is kind of not that. And it's been really fun to write. I don't want to call it an insta-love book. It kind of is, but not in like a cheesy, annoying way. It's just there's a lot of chemistry right off the bat. That is next for me. I will say for the book Girlies, it is centered around an indie bookstore. Which I'm really excited about, an indie romance bookstore. So I'm really excited about, like, to really dig into that. And it's based in London. So when I originally wrote The Ones That Write Themselves, it was going to be a trilogy on its own. And then when I reread it, I was just kind of like, I don't want to do interconnected standalone.
Yeah.
So my current plan is to do American in Ireland, American in England, American in Scotland. And like trilogy them that way.
Yeah.
Even if they're not connected, there will be like the little nods to past characters, not fun stuff. That's the current plan anyway. Don't like hold me to it if anything changes, but yeah, I just want to keep, I liked doing it and I want to keep doing it. And starting this book has made me remember how much I liked doing it, because I haven't really wrote anything from scratch since 2020. Yeah. So
I love that.
We'll see. That's so we'll see.
Yeah, that's perfect. Yeah. Listen, we're all obsessed with the British Isles. Like, come at us. Yes. You know?
Yeah. So,
yeah.
I mean, I too, I'm not gonna.
Like, listen. So, are you attending any events this year? Do you have any signings scheduled?
No, I haven't really like looked into that side of it or that world of it or figuring out how to do that as a self-published author, or like who to reach out to, that kind of thing. I would love to. If the book got big enough that people were like interested in that, I would absolutely love to. But nothing on the docket. I am going to some book events as a like reader, but there right now. So.
That's fun though. I love it. It's like that's the best part about being done with the pandemic a little bit, is the book events coming back.
Yes. I'm excited. I like them.
I love it. So where can everybody find you on the bookish interwebs?
My username is the same across all platforms. It's just Sydney Boland. It's just my name. Instagram is definitely my main platform. I use TikTok a little bit. I'm getting a little bit frustrated with it. I think it is because of my age. It's not for me. I try to force it, but you know, whatever. And then I'm new to Threads.
Nice.
So those are the three platforms. And then my website is just sydneyboland.com. So yeah, easy peasy, nothing out of the usual. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, that's the last question that I have for you. I had so much fun chatting. I love this
book. Yeah. I'm so glad that you liked it. It's fun for me to like talk to people that like it that I don't know, you know? So you're like, oh, maybe it is good.
Yeah. So right now it's on Kindle Unlimited, but you're taking it down from KU?
It will be off KU probably at the beginning of May, because I'm going to kind of, again, publishing your first book is a learning curve. So I'm going to try a slightly different avenue around the 6-month anniversary at the end of May. So it will be off of KU at the beginning of May. For anybody that wants to read it there, you have until May 1st.
That's right. That's perfect. Check it out on KU.
Yeah, you can. And then it won't go away after that. It will still be available.
You can buy the ebook and the paperback on Amazon. It just won't be on Kindle and
Unlimited. Exactly. I just wanted to give it a try for March because, you know, I love that stuff.
Yeah. So. Okay, perfect. Well, I really appreciate you coming on and chatting with me.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
thank you guys for tuning into this week's episode. Hope you enjoyed it. If you aren't following us, go ahead and follow us on TikTok and Instagram at the Bookish Banter Podcast. Please make sure to subscribe and leave us a 5-star review. And thank you guys again for all of your support. Have a great day.